Pas-de-deux, written by 7 Khepri Beatles, read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, teen. Relationship, Kit Fisto, original female character. Also tagged for humor, flirting. Kit, flirting is my default setting, Fisto. 3+1. And alternate universe, always a different sex. Part 4 of 7's Star Wars Lesbification Agenda. Recorded for Lattice Frames for ITPE 2022. Shore leave, Kit reflected, more than a little forlornly, was a bit like a Tuca, alluring at first glance, with a hollow novel's worth of trouble hidden beneath its skin, just waiting for you to get a little too close. "On your six," shouted Captain Shatter, her voice crackling through her helmet's vocorder, slightly tinnily from where it had been damaged by their fall. And Kit swung her lightsaber out in an arc of green to deflect the bolts from the combatant who had appeared from seemingly nowhere. Some sort of stealth technology, maybe? Setting that thought aside for later, Kit ducked under a crackling vibro-sword before coming back up and slicing it in half as the armored being overextended their grip. Unfortunately, while her attention had momentarily been caught by the two attackers, others had appeared, driving her and her squad apart, a clear divide-and-conquer tactic. Kit's lips pulled into a frown as she deflected another blaster bolt and tried to flip backwards over her attackers, trying to close in from behind her. She managed to land the flip rather gracefully, if she did say so herself, but she was instantly surrounded by the attackers, one of whom managed to clip her side with an electro staff. Kit's body spasmed without her permission, making her arms jerk and lightsaber drop from her grip, which was instantly snatched up by one of the ambushers. Blast, Kit thought, trying to bring her body back under control to little avail, a fact which was quickly taken advantage of as one of the attackers hit her with a nasty right hook and sent her sprawling to the ground, jaw smarting and eye watering, before it was followed up with a boot to the chest and a blaster held inches away from her face. "Surrender or die, interloper," the being on top of her hissed, basic, accented, and slightly twisted. Kit chanced a glance over to where her squad had been pushed, and grimaced when, out of the corner of her periphery, she caught the sight of Captain Shatter and her sisters with their hands up, helmets off, and blasters pressed to the back of their heads. "There isn't a possibility of negotiation, is there?" she tried, attempting to channel Obi-Wan's casually charming tone. It must not have worked, because the being above her growled and flipped the blaster around, bringing its butt down against Kit's forehead hard enough that the blow seemed to echo around the inside of her skull, like a particularly vicious ball, making her vision spot gray-blue, but not hard enough to actually knock her out. Somehow, she doubted it was accidental. All right, we surrender," she managed around the pain. The group of attackers muttered amongst themselves in grumbling tones, clearly unhappy with her decision, but finally the blaster was pulled away, and she was yanked to her feet harshly, hands pulled behind her back, and a pair of cuffs clearly meant for a human, or similarly sized beings, slapped over her wrists, the metal biting into her skin. Kit decided it was probably more prudent to not complain about that, given the clear malice radiating off her now captors, and let them lead her down one of the trails leading into the tall grasses. A moment later, her squad joined her, similarly cuffed, all looking a mixture of annoyed with and resigned to the situation, expressions clearly visible now that they lacked their helmets. "Any plan, General?" Shatter muttered in Rill, and Kit was suddenly glad that they had gone over shared languages when they had been first dispatched. "Not yet," Kit admitted quietly, just in case one of their captors decided they needed to be punished for being too loud. "For now, just do as they say. An opportunity will appear eventually." "The Force provides," Shatter said sardonically, reminding Kit that she had been attached to the 212th briefly. She smiled at the words, stifling an involuntary huff at the familiar phrase, though she wasn't able to control the twitch of her headtails, which, going by the slight quirk of the captain's lips, Shatter had noticed. They fell back into silence, following along after the captors leading the small procession, stalks of grass rustling around them with their movement. As they walked, Kit mentally catalogued her own capabilities and that of their captors. For them, battle-born familiarity and fluidity and stubbornness. For their captors, weapons and the advantage that came with unbound hands. Unfortunately, at the moment, their captors were coming out ahead. They finally came out of the grasses and onto a well-trodden path, leading up to a squat building made out of what appeared to be brick. It wasn't very large, perhaps only a handful of rooms, but it appeared to only have one singular exit, and the windows were small and looked to be too thick to break easily. Kit sighed. So it was going to be one of those days. They were marched inside two at a time, Shatter and Kit last, possibly in order for the captors to keep an eye on them for as long as possible. Just as they were about to enter, in Kit's case requiring her to hunch over so her head didn't hit the top of the door, a pair of blaster bolts whizzed past them. Kit instinctively turned her body to shield Shatter from further fire, before she realized the bolts had taken the remaining captors squarely in the chest, knocking them down. A moment later, a Mandalorian, of all things, dropped to the ground as their jetpack's thrusters cut out and swiftly dealt with the two downed beings, before turning to Kit and Shatter. "You want those cuffs off?" she asked. The two of them exchanged a glance. "You are not here to kill us?" Shatter checked. That elicited a snort. "You?" the Mando asked, pulling off their restraints. "Please, the pay wouldn't be enough." "I think I'd fetch a decent price," Kit protested. "I am a pretty handsome Jedi. You could probably sell me to Dooku for a nice sum." "General," Shatter said, clearly exasperated. "Please don't tempt the heavily armed and armored bounty hunter." "You're handsome enough," the Mando conceded. "But I'd rather impale myself on one of your laser swords than willingly help Dooku. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a bounty to drag, screaming and kicking back to the guild. So get out of my way, or I'll knock you two out as well." "Counterproposal," Kit shot back cheerily. "The rest of my men are currently being held in that building. We deal with the others together. I get my squad back, you get your bounty, and we all part ways as bosom friends." Shatter let out a choked-off laugh. The Mando's helmet tilted, the purple sunlight bouncing off her visor and making the dark, variegated markings on her trailing leku, bound together over her chest by large metal cuffs, look almost black. Your companion is of the fat lineage, she said. I'll have you know I'm a good fighter as well, Kit said. The Mando snorted. Without your jetty cod, you're like a streel pup, she said. You rely on it too much. No, stay out here, and the two of us will deal with the others. She makes a good point, Shatter said. Sorry, sir, we'll be back before you know it. She offered Kit a blinding smile, one that was a good impression of her own, meant to wash away the recipient's protests. It was fairly good, Kit thought, slightly despairingly. She sighed. Fine, she said. But if anything happens to the captain or any of my men, you'll hunt me down and exact your revenge, the Mando said drolly. Actually, I was going to say, I'll absolutely ruin your reputation as a bounty hunter, Kit said. It's almost like you don't know me. The look the Mando shot her was unreadable through the dark visor, but Kit was fairly certain it was some variation of put-upon exasperation. I don't, she said. Enough talking. Let's go. With that, she unholstered her blasters and advanced into the building, Shatter following along a moment later. Kit settled into a ready position, rubbing at her wrists to try to ease some of the soreness of where the cuffs had bit into her skin, and resigned herself to waiting. She didn't have to wait long, as it turned out. Within moments, shouts rang out, before quickly being silenced. Not long after, the Mando emerged once more, one of the former captors slung over her shoulder, nearly knocked out, Shatter and the rest of the squad following behind her, free of restraints. Kit expected the Mando to break off and disappear into the grasses, but surprisingly enough, she marched over to her, reaching into one of the pouches on her utility belt to pull out a familiar metal cylinder, holding it out to Kit. You're cad, so you aren't useless, she said. I'm not useless, Kit said, slightly exasperated, taking her lightsaber back and quickly checking it over for damage. The Mando tilted her head. Yes, because having to be rescued shows exactly how competent you are, she said dryly. An isolated incident, Kit dismissed, but thank you for your help. The Mando didn't offer a name, just turned and walked into the grass, quickly swallowed up by the tall green stalks. Kit sighed. Sometimes I understand Obi-Wan's complaints about the lack of civility in the galaxy, she muttered. You know, one of the selling points of being transferred to the 15th Corps was that we wouldn't have to deal with crazy Ossic like this anymore, Shatter said conversationally, from where she was pressed against the wall next to Kit. Really sorry about that, Kit said, but I'm afraid that insane situations are not, in fact, unique to Obi-Wan. She just happens to fall into them more frequently and with greater property damage as an end result. So just a Jedi thing then? Shatter sighed, the sound crackling through her vocorder, half lost the howl of wind around them. Kit chanced a glance downwards and then grimaced, regretting the decision as she confirmed her suspicions that there was, in fact, a multi-click drop below them. At least she wasn't outfitted with a force suppression collar. I can't confirm that, she said, but I would guess that the answer is probably yes. Something to do with more minor things not killing us, I think. Oh, excellent, Shatter said sarcastically, readjusting her stance in response to a particularly strong gust of wind. You don't die for normal things, so the galaxy just keeps throwing more and more insane shit at you. Exactly what I wanted to hear. I think the guard rotation should switch in about 10 or 15 minutes, Kit offered, around the howling wind, and tried not to shiver so hard she fell off the narrow ledge they were balanced on. Some of the rock crumbled off and fell down into the yawning white abyss beneath them. And Kit pressed herself back against the sheer rock face, wishing there was something she could grab onto. "If we survive that long," Shatter muttered, the words only barely audible. "Remind me to put a note into the file for this planet that the locals are definitely hostile to the Republic." "You know, I wasn't sure," Kit said. "The sedative-laced dinner and the poison dart sent a bit of a mixed message." Shatter let out a laugh and started to say something before she was cut off by the roar of thrusters. Kit craned her neck upwards, squinting into the almost blindingly white sky, and managed to make out a heavily armored figure. Mandalorian, with familiar leku falling over her black and orange chestplate, her back lek bound up to avoid the thrusters. "Need a hand?" she called, coming to hover at level with the two of them. "Look at that, Captain," Kit said. "Our very own angel in shining Beskar." "I thought you were going to make a joke about us hanging in there," Shatter said, sounding relieved. "The assist would be much appreciated, sir." The Mando made an abortive gesture. "Drop the sir," she ordered. "Be glad I decided to scope their defenses out from the outside before going in, or I wouldn't have found you. And I'm hardly an angel, considering I'm here to take out the Kang." "Well, no one's perfect," Kit said consolingly. "Don't worry, though. You're fairly close."
"Sir,"
Shatter said.
"Are you just planning to ignore her confession to planning to murder the king?"
She sounded more like she was saying it out of obligation rather than genuine concern, though.
"I don't know," Kit said. "I don't think I heard her say anything of the sort. Though if the king were to die, I'm sure it would be entirely unrelated to our Mando friend's presence and incredibly tragic."
"Hmm," said Shatter. "Actually, you know what? You're right. It must have been the wind distorting her words." The Mando cleared her throat loudly. "Are you two going to keep yakking until the ledge breaks off?"
"Oh, sorry," Kit said. "Yes, we would very much like to be rescued."
"Great," the Mando said. "I can only take one of you at a time, though, so let's hurry this along. I only have so much jetpack fuel."
Shatter turned her head to Kit. "You first, sir."
Kit shook her head. "Afraid not, Captain," she said, and then quickly cut off her protests. "If I were to fall, I would have a better chance of survival than you, what with the Force on my side. Mando, take her first, and then you can come back for me."
"You are awfully certain I won't just leave you to die," the Mando noted.
Kit tilted her head, smiling. "Well, you seem like the honorable type," she said. "Besides, your armor is painted for justice."
"You know the meanings of the colors?"
the Mando said, sounding slightly surprised.
"I asked one of my friends who spent time on Mandalore," Kit said, and started to continue before the ledge crumbled again.
Well, maybe now isn't the time for talking."
"No," the Mando agreed, and drifted forward, grabbing Shatter with ease and disappearing around the corner.
The sound of her thrusters fading away. Kit took the opportunity to shift slightly to the side on the now more empty ledge, edging away from the section that had been crumbling. An indeterminate amount of time later, the Mando returned. Kit, who had been relegated to an alarmingly small chunk of rock when the rest had suddenly broken off a while before, perked up.
"I knew you'd be back,"
the Mando grunted, tilting her helmet, clearly looking Kit over.
"You are larger than me, so I can't toss you over my shoulder," she said.
"Well, bridal carry it is then, I guess."
"You haven't even given me a ring yet," Kit said. "Isn't it a bit early for that?"
"Rings are a human social more," the Mando said. "Now, do you want to get off that ledge or not?"
"Fair point," Kit conceded.
"Yes, please,"
Without further ado, the Mando moved closer, hefting her up easily. Kit took a moment to appreciate it. Despite the fact that the Mando was only around 6'9", a good 10 inches shorter than her, she carried Kit with ease. Unfortunately, the Beskar of her armor was almost bitingly cold, and Kit found herself shivering. The Mando must have noticed, because she said, "You really should think about wearing more clothing. Aren't you Jedi monks who wear 50 layers or something?" "You're confusing the whole of us with the more modest of our order," Kit said, trying to keep the words from stuttering through chattering teeth. "And it's easier to move like this when I'm in battle." The Mando huffed. "Right," she said. "But there isn't a battle on this world, to my knowledge, which means this is just how you dress, like a pretty decoot." "You think I'm pretty?" Kit said, turning her head so she could offer the Mando an attempt at her usual charming smile. It was slightly ruined by the fact that she could no longer feel her lips. "You missed the part where I called you an idiot," the Mando said dryly, and maneuvered them onto a covered balcony, setting her down next to where Shatter was waiting. As soon as her arms were free, she dug around in one of the larger pouches on her belt, pulling out a square of folded fabric, and held it out to Kit. "Here, it's Orbach wool, so you don't freeze to death on your way back to your transport." "Thank you," Kit said, accepting the soft fabric and letting it fall open, wrapping it around her shoulders. The Mando didn't reply, just took off and disappeared around the corner. "I think this place is starting to rival Kamino for how much I hate it," Shatter said wearily, as they trudged through knee-high mud, minuscule insects swarming around them in the hundreds. "This was supposed to be an easy info retrieval mission. How did we end up here?" "You should stop expecting things to go smoothly," Kit advised. "It'll save you a lot of trouble." "I just might," the captain muttered. "Cody keeps telling me I have it easy now that I'm not with the 212th, but somehow I doubt she's had to slog through muck for a week straight after being separated from her squad." Kit hummed and swatted at the insects, which had started getting a bit uncomfortably close to her sensitive skin, and hoped to the force that they weren't bloodsuckers that carried some hitherto unknown strand of disease. With the way their luck was going, though, they just might be. "No, the 212th is generally deployed to active military zones over recovery missions," she agreed, and then squinted into the distance. "Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the building we're looking for, isn't it?" Shatter's helmet tilted, probably as she engaged the magnifying function on her HUD. And then she said, sounding slightly surprised, "Actually, I think it might be, sir." "Excellent," Kit said cheerfully. "We'll be out of this mud in no time then." "I don't think I'm going to be able to get it out of my blacks for at least a month," Shatter said, long-sufferingly. "It's like sand, but worse. At least sand is dry." "General Skywalker might argue that point," Kit said. "Well, General Skywalker," Shatter began, only to be cut off as Kit motioned for silence, having caught sight of a patrol not far ahead. Carefully, they snuck past them, keeping to the shadows cast by the tall trees. It didn't take long for them to come out into the clearing with the shiny, abstractly built laboratory building. Unfortunately, the humidity of the planet's climate meant that the mud hadn't dried, so they had to spend a good 10 minutes trying to scrape off as much of it as they could so they didn't leave obvious tracks when they entered the facility, since that would be a fairly obvious giveaway. Once they had gotten off as much of the muck as they could, they carefully crept up the stairs to one of the back entrances, Kit weaving the strongest notice-me-not into the force around them as she could. It was enough to get the job done, because the guards that were stationed in the alcoves of the hall inside didn't notice them. They made their way towards where Kit was fairly sure the databanks were, as quickly as they could without running and drawing attention to themselves. Winding through the twisting halls, finally they came to the large transparent steel door, the databanks clearly visible inside. Unfortunately, the security on the door was more than they had expected, both a key code lock and a handprint one. "We should have just taken the head scientist hostage, like Cinch suggested," Shatter sighed, giving up her attempts at trying to figure out if there was a way to manually force the door open. "The universe is laughing at us, I'm sure of it." "The universe," Kit began, only to be cut off as the sound of approaching footsteps reached them. Shatter quickly unholstered her blaster, and Kit brought her lightsaber to the ready, both of them tensed for a fight. Rather than the guards with blasters drawn that Kit expected, though, it was a tall Togruta with fractured white markings on her reddish-brown skin and familiar dark markings on her trailing Leku, who turned the corner. "Mando?" Kit said, tilting her head. "What are you doing here?" "My job," the Mando said, expression slightly exasperated. "Now, I'd appreciate it if you would lower your weapons." Kit and Shatter exchanged a glance. "What exactly were you hired for?" Shatter asked. "Because if it's for the bioweapon data, no can do." "Actually, I'm here about the data on the sentient being experimentation they've been doing," the Mando corrected. "My client wants to release it to try and bring the separatists to rights for what they've done." "An admirable goal," Kit said, pleased, and powered off her lightsaber, gesturing for Shatter to lower her blaster. "But you'll have to get past the locks first, I'm afraid." "Not a problem," the Mando said, and pulled out a thin, transparent sheet from inside her jacket. It was incredibly strange to see her in civilian clothing, Kit reflected, though she looked quite nice in them, and pressed it to the handprint scanner. "Unlike certain people, I took the time to hunt down one of the scientists and get a copy of their handprint." "Smart," Kit said approvingly, and returned to her efforts at slicing the keycode lock. A few moments later, it let out a soft beep, and the door slid open. "Beauty before age," she said cheerfully, gesturing for the Mando to enter. The Togruta rolled her eyes. "You can't be more than a year older than me," she said, "and your captain's 14 at most." "And a half," Shatter said, sounding slightly offended. "In Natborn years, that's late 20s. "Practically an odd," the Mando said, but did enter. Kit and Shatter followed a few moments later, the three of them making their way over to the holo terminals. The Mando produced a sleek data stick, plugging it into one of them, and Shatter pulled theirs out, plugging it into the other terminal. It didn't take long to find the information, and soon enough, they were stepping away from the holo terminals and making their way out of the room and towards the exit, avoiding the guards, a task made easier by the fact that the Mando appeared to know the guard's schedule. When they got to the edge of the clearing, Kit cleared her throat. "Can I get a name before you disappear this time?" she said, offering her most winning smile. "I'm Kit Fisto." Said the Mando. "Just so I can note your help in my reports," Kit said, widening her smile, watching the cracks appear in the other's composed facade. "Well, if that's all you're using it for," the Mando said finally. "Score," Kit thought. "Savrek, Clan Deshish, House Muriel." And then she said, "Until the next time I save your Shebs, Kit," and disappeared into the jungle. "You really know how to pick 'em, sir," Shatter said, sounding interminably amused. Kit let out a put-upon sigh. "Let's get that data stick back to base," she said, ignoring the captain's barely hidden smile. Under normal circumstances, Kit would have relished the opportunity to visit a water world. Being now Tolan, she was perfectly adapted to the climate and, of course, the vast bodies of water that came with it. Unfortunately, however, the planet was a cold one with roiling waves, unlike her balmy, calm home planet of Glee Anselm, and they were currently on board a cramped ship which was rolling and jerking on top of the turbulent surface. Shatter, one of the few Voda who hadn't had to run to empty their stomachs at some point, was curled in a small chair, peering at the holo display thrown up between the two of them. Kit had entirely abandoned her own chair, which had groaned piteously under her weight when she tried to sit in it, and instead folded herself into a neat squatting position that brought her more or less to eye level with the display. "We should reach the main defenses in a few hours," she said, gesturing to the line of small red dots indicating the Separatist forces. Assuming that they haven't moved since the Atmo probes took photos. "I still don't understand why we're even here," Shatter admitted, tapping her fingers on the fold-out table that was supporting the metal projector. "There's no strategic advantage to the Republic taking this world. It's on the very edge of Republic space. It's surrounded by armed worlds, and the natives don't produce any supplies that we can't get anywhere else." Kit sighed and watched the markers indicating their own three ships advance, another square across the display. "I couldn't tell you," she admitted. "The orders came from the Supreme Chancellor, though, so we couldn't exactly say no." "Criff the Supreme Chancellor," Shatter said forcefully. "Honestly, until he has to march a click in our boots, I don't understand why he's in charge of the Gar." She shifted in her seat, lips twisting with discomfort, and then opened her mouth to say something more before she was cut off by the sound of cannon fire. "So much for their forces not having moved," Kit said with a grimace, and rose, offering a hand to the captain, pulling her to her feet. They quickly hurried up to the main deck, where the rest of the crew had sprung into action admirably quickly. Shatter quickly moved to begin directing their efforts, and Kit made her way toward the upper deck, where she'd have the best chance of boarding the Separatist vessel and putting a decisive end to the battle. Thankfully, there was only one vessel attacking them, and its efforts were focused on the main deck in an attempt to do as much damage as possible, leaving Kit the opportunity to take the leap over the gap between the two ships fairly easily. There were only a handful of Separatist forces on the upper deck of their ship, and Kit made quick work of the droids, leaving them smoking piles of scrap metal behind her, before making her way down the stairs to the lower decks. As she turned a corner, she almost ran straight into a familiar Togruta, barely catching herself as she stumbled to avoid the collision. "Savrek," she greeted. "Let me guess, you're here to collect on a bounty on a Separatist officer who just so happens to be on this ship?"
"You know me so well, Kit," Savrek said, voice dry. "Republic pays well for bounties, it turns out."
Kit hummed.
"Yeah. Generally, institutions with greater monetary resources do," she agreed. "Since you don't have any attachment to this ship, what do you say we work together to capture it, and then you can walk away with your bounty?"
Savrek's helmet tilted, her visor glinting under the bright light.
"Sounds like a good enough plan to me," she said. "Lead the way."
They made quick work of the droids they encountered. Savrek putting blaster holes through the droids Kit didn't manage to slice up with her lightsaber, and soon enough they had made their way to the main deck. There were a few human officers here, and they had armed themselves with all the weapons they could find, and began firing as soon as Kit and Savrek entered.
Kit deflected the bolts as best as she could, but a few still glanced her, making her hiss with pain. One of the officers had found what looked like a hand cannon and was firing it wildly. The bolts were too large for Kit to deflect, so she was forced to dodge around them. Her attention caught by trying to avoid the bolts, Kit didn't notice that one of them had hit Savrick, occupied with two other officers, square in the chest until she slammed into the transparasteel of the viewport, which shattered with a loud crack, the Tigruta falling backwards into the water below. It was only then that Kit remembered she hadn't seen a jetpack strapped to the other's back. Her instinct screamed at her to dive after Savrick and pull her from the water, but she still had to finish her battle with the remaining officers. As quickly as she could, Kit attempted to redirect some of the bolts on the officers themselves, succeeding in taking two of them out, and then dealt with the final one with a forced shove that had him falling unconscious on the floor. That done, she quickly pulled out her comm, calling Shatter. "Enemy forces dealt with," she bit out, and then turned it off, leaping out the shattered viewport and falling into a streamlined dive into the water below. For a few heart-stopping moments, she couldn't find the Tigruta's armored form. But finally, out of the corner of her eye, she caught sight of a sinking shape and quickly swam towards it, letting out a sigh of relief when she got closer and saw it was Savrick. She didn't think too hard about the fact that she wasn't moving and grabbed her, pulling her towards the surface. A few smaller boarding crafts, all manned by Voda, had taken to the waves between the ships, and Kit swam towards the closest one, clambering on board one-handedly and dropped Savrick onto the deck, fingers scrambling as she pulled off her helmet to check her pulse. There was someone talking next to her, but Kit couldn't hear what they were saying, her focus fully on Savrick. When she couldn't feel the other breathing, she readjusted her position, dredging up memories of the last time she'd gone through first aid training, and positioned her hand over the Tigruta's chest, doing her best to administer chest compressions at the proper rate, alternating them with rescue breaths. After what seemed like an eternity, Savrick gasped beneath her hands, hands scrambling weakly to find purchase on her arms, and Kit pulled away to let her breathe, but remained hovering next to her. After a few minutes, the color began to return to the Mandalorian's face, lips no longer a grayish white, and her breaths evened out. "What?" she croaked out. "One of the officers clipped you with a hand cannon," Kit explained. "You fell through the viewport." Savrick drew in a few breaths before speaking. "And you rescued me, like a proper Jedi, of course," she said. It sounded almost teasing, if slightly breathless. "Well, if you'd like, I can drop you back in the water," Kit offered, lips twitching. The other let out a huff of amusement, eyes drifting shut for a second, before she tightened her grip on Kit, dragging her down and into an inelegant kiss. Somewhere to the side, someone cleared their throat. "Sir," Shatter said. Kit pulled away reluctantly. "Yes, Captain?" "I was going to suggest you take Ms. Deshiche to see Suture," she said. "She might be suffering from hypothermia." "Good point," Kit conceded, and tilted her head to the Mandalorian questioningly. All right," she said, and let Kit help her to her feet, the two of them heading down to the lower deck where the medic's temporary ward was. As they made their way down the hall, Kit said, "Not that I'm complaining, but why kiss me?" "Aside from the multiple times we flirted," Savrick said, sounding amused, "I wanted to kiss you before I died." "You're not going to die," Kit said. "That's the entire point of taking you to the medic." "Excellent," Savrick said. "In that case, you won't mind if I kiss you again, will you?" "We should probably wait until after we get Suture to check up on you," Kit said, but didn't protest when Savrick rolled her eyes and pulled her in for another kiss. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening. Reader's notes. Ah, water rescues. Water rescues are my thing at my day job. Yeah. So, I mean, the actual water rescue I can't really say anything about, considering that Kit is Natolan and therefore, like, literally a water creature and therefore built for that sort of thing in a way that humans aren't. I will say that, like, as a human, rescuing someone in full armor would be really hard. Though I do question every time people talk about Mandalorians, like, struggling with swimming in their armor, like, their helmet seals on, right? Probably. Shouldn't it have, like, a rebreather in there? Maybe? Maybe? Maybe not. Anyway, compressions and rescue breaths. This is another thing that I sometimes wonder about when it comes to sci-fi universes like Star Wars, where people aren't all human, because it's like, we know that there are non-humans in Star Wars with things like multiple hearts and hearts in different places. And I mean, again, Kit herself is Natolan, which means that she has some way to, like, breathe underwater, and, like, Togruta have the Montrails and the Lek. Like, it just makes me wonder if their internal organs are the same, because, like, what CPR is doing is you're pressing down on the sternum, hopefully, and that's compressing the whole chest cavity. And so you're doing two things with that. In the case of CPR, you are literally compressing the chest cavity so that it compresses the heart so that it pumps blood around. So you are circulating that person's blood because you are pumping the heart. It also, in the case of aspirated water and choking, you are also squeezing the lungs, which in the case of choking, like a blocked airway, is creating a pressure behind that blockage and hopefully going to cause it to come flying out, thus unblocking the airway and allowing the person to get air of their own. But, like, if you have two hearts in your chest, would you maybe want, like, considering these people are all humanoid, like, I'm assuming the rib cage bit is the same, but maybe not. Like, would you want to be pressing in the same place? Would you want to be, like, maybe there's a different place to press. Maybe their heart works totally differently, or their circulation system works totally differently. Like, just, I have so many questions. Also, those clone medics, like, especially the ones that work with non-human Jedi, like, or any medic who would have to know, like, all the anatomy and pathology of all, not only all the humans that they're working on, but also all the, like, other species that they're working on, like, med school.